It's time for the Drive's Top 4 at 4.
Hour number 2 of the Drive underway. Top 4 at 4 brought to you by FanDuel. And I got the big Thanksgiving special we'll tell you about coming up here in just a moment. Bear?
Thank you, Russell. Number one, it was hard to pick a number one today, but we'll go ahead and go with Alabama coach Nick Saban has tested positive and is symptomatic for COVID-19. He will not be coaching at the Iron Bowl on Saturday evening, or is it afternoon? Saturday afternoon. According to a statement released by the University, Russ, Saban received a positive test Wednesday morning and is showing very mild symptoms. Because Saban is symptomatic, the test will not be categorized as a false positive. He will follow all appropriate guidelines and isolate at home, chief physician Dr. Jimmy Robinson and head athletic trainer Jeff Allen said the statement. Says he's got a runny nose.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the loss of taste or smell, so.
Yeah, if that's the worst that happens to him, I guess he'll be fine. But, he's... For an older fellow, I think he just turned 69, which is nice. And I think that he takes care of himself. He's a former college athlete. He's outside getting exercise every day. He eats the same thing, turkey salad for lunch every day. So he's in pretty good shape. Listen, man, you say a lot of things about Nick Saban. I hope he recovers quickly.
Yeah. Best wishes out to Coach Saban. Be the only time I say anything nice about that guy. Number two, sad and shocking news in the world of football. Argentinian football legend Diego Maradona dies at age 60 after suffering a heart attack. And he's been in really rough shape lately. And he had brain surgery a couple of weeks ago. Yeah.
They were worried that the brain surgery, there are a lot of people that worried that he wasn't going to pull through that. So, yeah, obviously he was in terrible health. I mean, Diego Maradona, one of the seminal figures of the 20th century in world sports. I know probably a lot of our listeners probably don't even know who that is, but he's just a terrific player for the Argentinian national team, led them to a World Cup championship in 1986. It then played... I believe he played in Italy for Napoli or something like that. Drew,
it was Napoli.
Yeah, so just a great player and a symbol of that country's pride for so long. I can't imagine the devastation that country must feel today.
That's pretty bad. He's one of the most famous moments in the history of the sport. The quote unquote hand of God goal came when the diminutive Maradona punched the ball into England's net during the 1986 World Cup quarterfinals.
Yeah, he got away with that. That was before VAR. So he was able to get that. But he also
cost my Man City boys last year.
In that same game, he also had one of the greatest goals you'll ever see, or he basically took the ball from one end of the field to the other all by himself, ran through England's entire defense, and scored anyway, so that would have made it a draw. Who knows what would have happened in extra time, but he was a great player and larger than life personality off the field, so Godspeed, and as we say, good night, sweet Prince Diego Maradona, dead at the age of 60 today.
Good night, sweet Prince. Number three, the Baltimore Ravens-Pittsburgh Steelers game that was supposed to scheduled to be played tomorrow night has been moved to Sunday. After positive coronavirus tests in the Ravens program. It has also prompted an angry response from Steelers players.
Why?
I think it's the second time the Steelers schedule has been affected by COVID-19. Here we go. Juju Smith-Schuster on Twitter. First, the NFL takes away our bye week because another team can't get their COVID situation together. Now they take away our Thanksgiving primetime game for the same reason. Shaking my head.
Yeah, I would just, same advice to him as Dabo Swinney, is just when stuff like this happens, man, just keep your mouth shut because you end up looking like an idiot. And there's nothing the Steelers or the Ravens or anything, any of those folks probably could have done. It sounds like these guys are all trying their best, and it's just, it's an airborne disease, man. What are you going to do? All right, Bear, wrap up for us.
All right, number four, West Virginia is set to replace Tennessee in next week's Jimmy V Classic. It was announced on Wednesday. They will face preseason number one Gonzaga next Wednesday night in Indianapolis.
So the West Virginia basketball team picking one up. Meanwhile, Bruce Feldman reporting just moments ago the West Virginia football game against Oklahoma that was scheduled for Saturday has been postponed. So, oh, Oklahoma is suddenly resurging. Of course, West Virginia is West Virginia. Oh, we deleted it, Drew. Okay, so maybe
yeah,
that's still
just deleted
on.
It.
Oh, wow. Bruce Feldman maybe jumped the gun. That's very un-Bruce Feldman. Thank you, Bear. The top four at four is brought to you.
No, it's true.
It's true?
Yeah, Max Olson from The Athletic is saying OU has temporarily paused football activities, and the game has been postponed.
Okay, so that one's off the docket as well. Folks, FanDuel is still on. We've still got two NFL games tomorrow, and we've still got that great first-time 25-1 odds boost for any new FanDuel user. If you've been sitting on the sidelines, you've been hearing us talk about FanDuel for over a month now, and like, oh, that sounds pretty cool. I don't know. I'm not a huge gambler. Well, this is the chance to get in on it, folks. 25-1 odds. That means you can bet $5 and win $125. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. It's simple. It's free. It's easy to use. Very intuitive. And then go pick your games. I already told you I'm on the Texans beating the Lions tomorrow. I think the Texans are going to handle them. They're a 3-point favorite. That should be an entertaining game. And then the Cowboys are 2.5-point favorites at home against Washington tomorrow. Course, the Steelers, Ravens now off. That's a huge hole, by the way, in the TV lineup tomorrow night that the NFL is going to be missing. But anyway, still two NFL games tomorrow. You can go bet on that at FanDuel. Download the app today. Make your bets. FanDuel, be sure to use promo code DRIVE1 so you get that 25-1 odds boost. And they know we sent you promo code DRIVE1. Got to be 21 or older, present in Tennessee. New users only on this offer. You must wager on designated boost market. Deposit required, max bonus $125. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com for details. For problem gambling support, call 1-800-889-9789. I'm live this afternoon at Old Ben Franklin Motors in West Knoxville. We're taking your phone calls, 865-546-8200. And let's grab a call from Taylor, who's been hanging on through the break. Good afternoon, Taylor. You're on the drive.
Good afternoon, Russ.
What's going on, man?
Well, I got a take that you and Bear are not going to like, but I'm just going to go ahead and jump right into it. It's time to tell both these losers and Fulmer and Pruitt to kick rocks.
Clean house.
I mean, for anybody who thought giving him bumping up his buyout should be gone.
Well, I do think you have to, you know, you look at the full story, and that's very – I agree with you, Taylor, but just to play devil's advocate, go back to the end of last year. I'm not talking even before the season. I'm talking after last year. You've beaten Indiana. We were all pretty much on the Pruitt bandwagon. Now, I don't know that anybody thought that Tennessee had arrived or – that it was fixed or that Pruitt was ever going to win a national championship. But it was almost universally agreed upon here locally, anyway, that Jeremy Pruitt had this thing trending in the right direction. He won 7 in a row. He'd won a bowl game. There was a feeling that he would certainly do a nice bump in salary, a little raise, a little extension. Nothing massive. You don't rip up the contract, just do it over. But just a little show that, hey, we're behind you. We like what you're doing. Now, that was before COVID and all the belt tightening and everything. So I agree that it probably at that point, that was a good chance to get out of it and lessen the terms. That you didn't negotiate a better buyout is just unconscionable. There's a lot we can nitpick about it. But I do think that you do have to realize, I think that just hammering Fulmer for the extension is I feel like that's low-hanging fruit.
I mean, I guess you could be right, but, I mean, if we're going to talk about the Indiana game, what had to happen for us to win that game, Russ?
Oh, sure, we got lucky.
If you have to get an onside kick to beat Indiana, we are nowhere near back.
Barry, you've been flirting with these bashers that are pulling against Tennessee to hasten the coaching change, right? Do you think you understand? So you understand this mindset better than I do. Do you think those people wish in hindsight that Eric Gray hadn't recovered that onside kick so that Indiana would have won that bowl game, Pruitt wouldn't have gotten the raise, and therefore would be more, quote-unquote, fireable right now?
I mean, probably. It's hard to tell with that crew, with that group. I don't know. You know, we didn't want to get embarrassed by Indiana. No offense to Dr. Maurice, but you don't want to lose to Indiana in a bowl game.
Anything else, Taylor?
No. I mean, just to give you guys a little context, I don't have the emotional tie to Fulmer because I'm 26. So last time he won a trophy in 98, I was 3 years old. I mean, what do you think I remember of that season?
Not a thing, so you can't say anything bad about him because that man brought us Peyton Manning, Al Wilson, a host of other volunteers, T. Martin, and a natty. My man, okay. I'm getting pretty tired of you young punks throwing off on my guy, Coach Fulmer, the battle captain.
Well, here's the thing, Bear. Trey's even said it himself. You have to differentiate the coach and the AD. He's done nothing as AD.
Can't do it, my man. He brought me and Russ and the old head so much happiness when we were in college that. You know, I mean, I'm sorry. I'll never turn my back on it. You all have no idea what it's like to be a fan of a national powerhouse program like Russell and I and the old dudes are.
Taylor, I'll turn my back on him in a second. If I thought I would bring Hugh Freeze here, I'd turn my back on Philip Fulmer right now. I'll show him out the door, man. He's going to get a golden parachute again. He's going to get $1 million for his trouble on the way out the door. He still won that national championship. He's still fabulously wealthy. His reputation isn't ruined just because he didn't get it done as athletics director here. But the flip side of that is he can be the hero once again if he gives this fan base what he wants, and he can help Hugh Freeze get set up here, get his program running, and then retire the grand old man of Tennessee football. So I'm not giving up on him just yet because I think he can do those things. But if he doesn't want to, I would have no qualms about seeing him pushed out again to bring in somebody who will get done what needs to be done here. Taylor, we appreciate the phone call. Thank you for chiming in. We're going to get Trey's thoughts on this when we continue live this afternoon at Old Ben Franklin Motors, 865-546-8200. The Drive continues. Back with more after this.
The Drive.
Van Run Radio, The Drive continues live this afternoon at Old Ben Franklin Motors. Come on down, see us, 865-546-8200. Your number to get on the G3 Help Me Hotline this afternoon. Today's Rickard Ridge Barbecue smoking hot question. We've got over 500 votes cast now at Fox Sports Knox on Twitter. Do you have confidence that Jeremy Pruitt can turn Tennessee football around? Over 500 votes cast now. 77.3% of the audience says no. 22.7% says yes. And I'll be honest, Trey. I'll be honest. That's a little bit better than I thought. And these teams, I probably shouldn't be surprised. These things typically, you know, there's the silent majority and all that stuff. I thought it'd be maybe 80% or higher, 77.3%, probably not. as bad as I thought it would be for Jeremy Pruitt right now. Your thoughts on what Taylor had to say regarding Coach Fulmer and you know, this is what Nick Bromberg brought up as well, whether or not he should be the one to make another football hire for Tennessee.
I think you have to take a step back, and I keep saying this. I said this yesterday. You know what I mean? Like, what would Florida do in the situation? What would Georgia do? What would Alabama do? Would they sit around with the presidents of those universities and that know how much of a moneymaker football is for the overall budget of the universities? Would they sit around and wait for things just to continue getting worse? Or would they kind of put their foot down like Robert Cashlin did at South Carolina and say, hey, look, Ray Tanner, you got to go out and do something here. And the problem is, Russ, I don't know if Tennessee has that. Like, I don't know if they have somebody that's going to go say, hey, you better go change things up. And I don't agree with the buyout thing. Because I said this whenever they did the extension. What are you giving him an extension for? There's nobody coming after him. He's not going anywhere. So why trot this out there? And I just, even when they were 2-0. So I don't know, Russ. I just don't get it. I didn't quite understand it. And I thought they could have waited until next year to do an extension. Why try to hammer that out now?
Well, and you raise a great point about the, you know, other schools, presidents and other folks getting involved here. And let's be real honest with each other here, Trey. If you think Dondi Plowman's opinion on whose football coach is carries any sort of, I'm not trying to be sexist or anything here, but if you think like her opinion on any of this matters, then
it does.
I don't know what to tell you. No, it's now, could she certainly voice an opinion? Sure. But at the end of the day, the people that matter are the people that cut the big checks. And, you know, I was talking to somebody yesterday who's I would consider a very good source. And I was asking this person, who does, you know, what does Coach Fulmer think about that? He's over there and we're talking about Pruitt and what a train wreck it is behind the scenes. And so, you know, what does Coach Fulmer think about all this? He's got to see this. He's got to know what's happening. And this person told me, basically, look, Coach Fulmer isn't listening to the current players. He's not listening to the former players. He's not listening to his coaching buddies or anything like that. Coach Fulmer listens to the big money boosters. That's who he listens to over there. So if you want a coaching change, if you want to see Tennessee move on from Jeremy Pruitt, if you're expecting anything big to happen in that regard, then it's going to start with the big money boosters. And I don't even know who all of those people are, but I know that the ones I do know, they're not talking. They're not going to issue a press statement or anything like that. That stuff is all going to happen in the smoke-filled room, right? So
no, I agree with this because it's going to happen at the weekly poker game. No, I mean,
it's going to happen at Dunwoody, Trey.
Right, Dunwoody. Yeah, that's the one. That's the one. I don't know, man. This is all this is uncharted territories for Philip Fulmer. You know what I mean? And as an athletic director, so that's why he's got to make the right decision. And he's not happy. Like, I mean, I've talked with some folks, but that's not a secret. And he's just agitated. And there's a lot of things that go on that are going on behind the scenes. And I'll say this, I think things would be just as, maybe not just as interesting and rough over there right now if they had a winning record, but I would still think you would have folks that just don't like Jeremy Pruitt, even if they were like 5-2 right now.
Yeah, yeah, but winning cures all. Let's get exactly. Phil in here next on the G3 Help Me Hotline. Hello, Phil.
What do you say, W?
Hey, Philly, how's it going?
All right, I hope you, Bear, and Trey have a good Thanksgiving tomorrow.
You too, man. Thanks.
Where we're gonna start here? I guess the program that Johnny Major is resurrected is almost dug all into the ground now.
Yeah, it really is, Phil. It's cratered. I've stopped saying there's no lower to go because every time we say that, we find another layer. But to say it's irrelevant is a understatement at this point.
Well, you had the caller that called a little while ago getting on Bear. All honesty, we've seen a whole generation of Tennessee fans don't even know what good football is.
And that's got to be such a concern if you're, you know, Coach Fulmer, the business people over there, and, you know, how are you going to perpetuate this thing? Because, yeah, there's plenty of folks our age and older who remember the good old days and want to see those come back, and they're going to continue to donate and go to games and hope that that can happen. But for a generation, for Drew's generation, the folks that are graduating from UT now, and football is just not that big a deal for them, what incentive do they have to invest not only financially but emotionally as well? That's going to be a problem, you know, 10, 15, 20 years down the road when you're in these situations where you got to raise money.
Yeah. But you look at it, Tennessee football is like Tennessee basketball used to be when they went through a bad series of hires and this, that, and the other, and then Buck Pearl came available. Well, Hugh Freeze is the Buck Pearl of football. That can turn the whole thing around. I don't care if he's there 5 or 6 years. He's got to turn the program around. Our program hasn't been turned around in 15 years, 16 years.
Well, and here's the thing, Phil. If Hugh Freeze gets this job, is here 5 years, and has, we'll say he just wins one Eastern Division title. He has one good 10-win season, and then he resigns or is fired in disgrace. Well, yeah, I mean, that would stink at that point, but at
but
least then you've had that one season that can show the world that you can still win at
something.
Tennessee. You can go, yeah, that's part of the problem right now is it's been so long that it's no longer a sought-after job. So here you've got a guy that has had some success and is seeking the job. I just think it would be extremely foolish to turn a blind eye to that.
So basically you're thinking $40 million, 20 to buy them out and 20 to bring a new staff in. Is that about right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and again, this isn't a lump sum. This is spread out over years and contracts and stuff, but it's going to be extraordinarily expensive for sure.
Well, Tennessee football's in the crossroad. They have to start winning here pretty soon, or they're going to have a lot of empty seats over there. The coronavirus has already done us in, but now people can quit going.
Yeah.
People have had enough of it.
It's they're between a rock and a hard place on this. They're going to lose a ton of money no matter what they do. So you just have to understand that. I mean, it's like, to make a chess analogy, you chess players out there, it's like you're going to lose your queen, man. It's gone. You're trapped.
Yeah.
But if you can save your king, that's what you got to move on at this point, because that's what it's all about. And football's the king.
Russ, what was this Chucky Doak and Wes Green you were talking about a little while ago?
Apparently, there was, I don't know, some sort of high school basketball
contest.
Yeah,
I saw it. You have to give Morristown West credit. I mean, Morristown East credit. They beat Catholic at the buzzer, a layup at the buzzer. When you don't play well, you get beat. And that's the way basketball is. They got a good team. They got a 6'9 center that he's probably going to start drawing more interest. He's kind of a European-style player. He's kind of like Brock Jansen, who seems to shoot threes.
Barry, you got any thoughts on the Catholic basketball game today you want to share?
Nah.
All right, then.
I'll bounce back. Middle-of-the-day game. Give Coach Hutchins over there fuel for the fire that he's going to stoke up underneath their asses over there now, I imagine.
Sometimes a loss is good, especially in basketball. All that matters is what you do at the end of the year anyway. See.
Thank you, Phil. Appreciate the phone call. Josh Pate of 247sports.com joins us to talk SEC, Tennessee, and college football when we continue next right here on Fan Run Radio. Stay with us.
The Drive.
Welcome back. The Drive continues on Fan Run Radio live this afternoon. Oben Franklin Motors, rainy day in West Knoxville. Russell Bear Trey, pleased to be joined now by Josh Pate of 247sports.com. Sportsnet.com. Good afternoon, Josh. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Hey, we're doing well. First of all, before we get down to it, happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. I know it's been a long year, but we're grateful for the contributions you've made on our show this year, Josh. We hope you have a great holiday tomorrow.
I appreciate that. Same to you guys. I've made it safely down here to Georgia where it's weird. It's like 80 degrees. So no one down here is complaining, I can assure you.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I would assume not. Speaking of complaining, let's talk about Tennessee football.
it's an evergreen Josh, transition at this point.
Yeah, I know we ask you, it seems like every week now, for like your big picture 10,000-foot view of Tennessee football. But let's start in the short term here. Did Tennessee actually get lucky and dodge a bullet? We saw Vanderbilt put up a fight against Florida this week, and we all know the skid that Tennessee's on. Did Tennessee actually get fortunate in not having to play this game this weekend in Nashville?
Yeah, it's interesting because I had a buddy of mine who's a huge Tennessee fan, and he was kind of I don't know that he was suggesting that, but he was asking me sort of what I thought about that. And he said, well, you know, I could have seen this going either way. I'm kind of in the same boat as him. Now, certainly, if it's true, and there's no, I guess, sure way to know this, if it's true that Jeremy Pruitt's job is, like, in play, the state of his job's in play this year, and therefore a loss could have irreparably damaged his future there, then, yeah, I guess you could have dodged a bullet, but that's if you would have lost the game, because just as sure as you say that, you could have won the game, and then not only does that buoy a lot of, well, I don't say confidence, it quiets a lot of the doubt for the time being. But I guess the status quo, you know, if it wasn't already over the edge before, then status quo can be maintained and no one gets hurt. I think they wanted to play. Well, let me rephrase. I think Pruitt wanted to play. I can't tell you how many in the program wanted to play, but I, unlike some people, I have not looked at that team like I have some teams out here. Some teams out here, I think it's pretty obvious if you watch them, even from afar, have sort of mailed it in. And even if Tennessee's playing poorly, I haven't looked at their program and thought that one time this year. I got into it pretty vehemently with someone on air elsewhere the other day who wanted to lump Tennessee in with some other programs who looked like they just quit on their coach. Well, I don't think that's the case. And some could disagree, of course. You can be a bad football team and not have mailed anything in or quit on anyone. And so that's where I'd classify Tennessee right now.
So if you think that Tennessee is still showing a bit of a pulse here, what's the fix for Jeremy Pruitt? Obviously, this season is pretty much done for. I suppose a win against Florida or Texas A&M would be a huge upset. That would move the needle a little bit going into an offseason, heading into what will be a hot seat year, surely, for Jeremy Pruitt. But assuming that you don't get one of those wins and you get to the offseason and you're coming back and you're going to make some stat changes, what's the Josh Pate prescription to fix Tennessee football heading into what will certainly be a must-fix year for Jeremy Pruitt?
Well, the first key to 2021 is see enough of Harrison Bailey this year to know at least what you have in him and what potential you have in him. It's why I and many other people, I would assume, have wanted to see more of him to this point. How much of him were we going to see this weekend? Who in the world knows? I heard Pruitt talking about Garantano again, so who in the world knows? That's what you got to find out, because the answer is quarterback by 10 miles. It's the answer at Penn State. It's the answer at Tennessee. And here's the thing about college football today. In college football today, you can look like you are miles away from competition and really just be a quarterback away. And I'm not necessarily sure that's where Tennessee is, but I think if you just put an elite quarterback on that team and change nothing else about it, you're changing multiple outcomes this year. And so multiple outcomes, you know, you can swing really quickly. This isn't Major League Baseball. If you change four outcomes in a season in football, I mean, that's a third of your season. Like, you have no clue how different that looks and how different it feels. How do they get quarterback figured out? Well, the guy's either already in-house in Harrison Bailey, and that's a question mark at this point, or you got to go get him. And I don't necessarily know that it's going to be the easiest thing to do to attract a top-name quarterback to their program doing it the way they currently do it offensively. Which leads me to my next question. They just have to get offense figured out in general. And if it's Jim Chaney or if it's not Jim Chaney, you got to get something figured out, because as much as I've defended Pruitt and said this should not be a year where he's fired one way or the other, I don't have any problem with someone saying, well, okay, here's the counterpoint. Let's just say he enters next year on the hot seat. I have no problem with that. You're 4 years in at that point. Roster is yours. Team's yours. The identity reflects you. I have no problem with that. You cannot sell me that you're going to maintain status quo offensively and get me to look forward to next year if I'm a Tennessee fan. You just can't. I'll give you the leeway. I'll meet you in the middle, but you got to meet me in the middle, and you got to at least invest in some kind of wholesale change, or at least fractional wholesale changes, which is kind of counterintuitive offensively, to at least instill some confidence and at least attract some top-name talent, whether it be on the transfer market or in recruiting traditionally, to hopefully rectify this thing.
Hey, Josh, it's Trey. Thanks for joining us, brother. And I want to stick with that evaluation thing for a second. So I'm going to take you back. Jeremy Pruitt's first year, he brings in JT Shrout from California, who had some, you know, Mountain West offers, not really anything out of the SEC, not much even out of the Sun Belt, you know, as a reference. And then you look at what happened the next year. They bring in Brian Maurer, and that's a QB evaluation from Jeremy Pruitt. They decided, you know, they needed Keller Crist as a kind of a fill-in to see how that played out. And then they go and get Harrison Bailey. And Harrison Bailey is the quarterback that Jim Chaney was not recruiting at Georgia when he was there. And then when he took the Tennessee job, Jim Chaney did not even go on the in-home visit with Bailey before he committed to Tennessee. So what I'm getting at here, I understand Tennessee fans are aggravated about the quarterback situation, but I don't think they should be going after the quarterbacks. I think they should be going after the people that are evaluating these players that they're bringing in.
It's a really good point, and I think it also speaks to potentially why you haven't seen more of him on the field. Because when you look at it that way, and it's a really good way to frame it, I think 99% of the college football public is unaware of it to that granular a degree. But if you're aware of it from that perspective, and you're right, he wasn't recruiting him at Georgia. You could, for all you know, have a guy who's not crazy, an offensive coordinator who's not crazy about Harrison Bailey, or who doesn't necessarily view him as fitting the mold that he needs in his system. And maybe that's why there hasn't been more of a push to get him on the field this year. We've gone back to the whole, well, he missed spring, well, he had COVID, and this and that. Yeah, okay, that's cool. But now we're way into the season and to the point where he's gotten serious reps and he's gone through the equivalent of what you would have gone through in spring and summer, to where if you were starting the season now, you're where you would be. Well, that doesn't make sense. But he's gotten adequate work in to where you would think he'd be able to start right now. It may be like you just said, maybe Chaney doesn't view him as his guy. And I know it's hard, just like it's hard for me, to watch the product right now and think, are you seriously telling me this is a better option? But that's why I'm telling you, when you look forward down the road, I mean, is it Jim Chaney or is it someone else in there? I mean, if it's someone else, who is it? And who are you going to attract? Because it's, as you guys know, it's not the easiest thing in the world. Kind of like Will Muschamp just learned, or I guess Mike Bobo learned. Not the easiest thing in the world to have the public know you are on the hot seat and then try and go hire a coordinator. Not many people who are high profile and have options want to hitch their wagon to that.
Well, I agree completely. And you look at Tennessee's offensive coordinator position, then you look at the quarterback coach position. I just think things have been fumbled around so much when it comes to offense. Because, and Josh, I'll put it to you this way too. You know, Jeremy Pruitt likes to take the best players and put them on defense. You know, I had one person in the Tennessee program tell me that the best running back is on the team is actually playing linebacker right now in Kavarius Crouch. And I just have to wonder, you know, do they take a reevaluation with some of these guys in the offseason if they get to stick around? And then what is the process? You know, if you have staff turnover, you know, how does that play out with the early signing day period potentially going to be 3 days after Tennessee's last game?
Yeah, it's a mess for everyone. I don't think anyone's really figured that whole process out. You ask about the process. You know, with the old calendar, there was an obvious blueprint you went by. It was pretty universal. Well, now, with everything moving around and all the dates moving around, and then in and of itself, just this year, you have dates moving around and no official visit season, what have you. I don't know that anyone really has that figured out. I don't know that there's a clean way to do that. And so I've seen some programs out there, and I don't know that this will be the end result, but it feels like they're going to kind of keep themselves handcuffed to a losing proposition just for the sake of not interrupting a signing period or whatnot. But the problem is, the major catch-22 is if you keep personnel on your staff where it hasn't worked out, it doesn't matter what kind of recruiting class you're bringing in and putting in front of them anyway. The whole point is they haven't been getting it done. And so if what would you rather do? Would you rather keep a failing system in place and give it a little bit more talent to work with and underachieve? Or would you rather take a chance, bring in new staff pieces, maybe lose a couple of kids in the process, but overall give yourself a much higher reward proposition as you increase your risk proposition a little bit too?
Last question for me, buddy, and I appreciate you joining us. When we look at where to go in the SEC next year and how Tennessee could potentially keep Jeremy Pruitt around, because I just don't see many other jobs opening up. Maybe Vanderbilt does something. I really don't think they are as of now. Would it be smarter for Tennessee to hold off and wait till next season to maybe go see what's out there coaching-wise? Because if they did pull the trigger this year, I just got this feeling, Josh, that there'd only be a couple candidates that might be open.
I think that's part of the issue they face. The second part is, I think a lot of people internally still believe in Pruitt. I won't say that's a problem. That's just a reality. But the third part is, kind of married to the first part of what you said there, think about the perception outside. So the perception outside is, you're trying to sell your vision of your program to other suitors. And this is if you fire Pruitt. Well, what I'm looking at, if you want an elite coach at Tennessee, make no bones about it. That's the only reason you'd fire Pruitt if you thought you could get something definitively better. If you can't, it just doesn't make sense to make the move. Well, if I'm a lot better than Pruitt, that means I have a bunch of options. Am I going to pass on those other options to take a job at a place where I look at a guy who entered this season being his third year? He was in the process of having to overturn a roster. He wasn't viewed as being a hot seat guy to begin the season by most people. And not only did he get placed on the hot season during a hot seat during an unprecedented year, they took the added step of firing him. Do I think I'm going to have the kind of job security there that it takes to rebuild what they screwed up? I think you got to take that into consideration. Auburn was close to firing Malzahn a couple of years ago and ended up not doing it. And I think they made the right move there, because you got to be careful. What does it project to the field of candidates when you make a move on your current head coach when you make the move?
I just can't believe we're even here. The conversations that we were having all summer long, all offseason long, and to be here, if you had told me 3 months ago, the day before Thanksgiving, we'd be sitting here talking about whether or not to fire Jeremy Pruitt, I said that's crazy. Like something crazy must have happened, right? NCAA violation, a loss to, I don't even remember who Tennessee was supposed to, Furman or something earlier in the year. But I guess that's par for the course in 2020, Josh.
I guess it is. But like you just said, we haven't had those cataclysmic sort of situations, which is why I'm not on board that train at all, a fire Pruitt or hot seat. I'm not on. But if you want to talk about next year, that's fine. You're not getting me there, because my whole stance on this the whole time has been, if I wasn't there before the season, then I'm certainly not going to let 2020 put me there. At Muschamp, a lot of folks were already there. With Pruitt, they weren't there. So I'm not taking that step yet in 2020, and I won't take that step.
I'm sure Pruitt and his backers are grateful and hopeful more people are taking that position. Josh, again, happy Thanksgiving. Appreciate your contributions to our show this year, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
All right, guys. I appreciate it.
Yep. Josh Pate, 24/7 Sports. He's at Late Kick Josh on Twitter if you want to go follow him there. Joining us on the G3 Help Me Hotline. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back to wrap up hour number two of The Drive right after this. It's Fan Run Radio.
The Drive. Man.
All right, back here on The Drive, it's Fan Run Radio. Russell, Baron, Trey cruising along with you on a Wednesday afternoon edition of the show. You know, it's interesting. We talked to these guys. First of all, Josh Pate, 24/7 Sports. Bear, what did you learn?
Well, Russ, I'll have to go back and listen on the podcast, as I was trying to put out the inferno that you have started with with some of my associates.
Oh yeah, did you pass along my note?
No, I did not. I don't think you understand what happens if I pass along that note to those guys.
See what happens. Take a screenshot, post it. See what happens.
I don't think you want me to do that, dude. Those guys are vicious.
Bear, Jeff on Twitter wants to know what your Thanksgiving pie power rankings is. Do you have favorite Thanksgiving pie?
No, I don't eat pie on Thanksgiving.
Of course not. Of course not.
Well, I mean, I've got my menu planned out for tomorrow night, though.
What's that?
I'm going to have a beef tenderloin with a nice horseradish cream sauce, a baked potato, some green beans, not casserole. That sucks. I would rather eat dirty cat litter than eat a green bean casserole. And I'm going to finish it up with a piece of that cake my mom makes that you got for your birthday, finally. Mainly because your wife's cool, and I wanted her to try it.
You want to make some sort of a trade? You know, we give you some of our dessert. You bring over some of that apple confection.
Oh, no. You don't have to trade. I will make sure to save a piece for your oldest, the princess, and for your lovely wife. I'll make sure that the two of them get a piece. And, oh, even little man, I'll make sure he gets a piece. But until you apologize to my friends for your scurrilous and unwarranted attack on them today, you will not be getting anything, Russell.
I apologize for that. The day I apologize for laughing at you and the day you fell down. That's been, what, 2 years now? It must be coming up on the anniversary of you falling down the steps here at Old Ben Franklin Motors.
What?
You mean the day where you had to rush to get to some family function and I was trying to be nice, so I had literally the entire remote, including the table, walking down the steps, lost my balance, so dropped everything, did a Hal Needham stuntman-like roll, tuck and roll, and then you made it out like I was Wilford Brimley and I'd fallen and I couldn't get up, which wasn't true.
Oh, you absolutely.
Marcellus was standing right there. He looked down and he said, "You okay, big man?" I said, "I sure am, Marcellus." And then he helped me up.
Spread eagle, flat on his back, Drew, gasping for air. He's making a sound. Home Alone.
Because I was laughing, Drew.
You know, the sticky bandits when they fall and, they fall on their back and then, like, the wrench falls on his head like he's Wile E. Coyote or something and he's just lying there going, funniest thing I've ever seen.
God, I wish I was so there funny. To see that.
She had video. All right, let's get David in here next on the G3 Help Me Hotline. Hello, David.
Guys, you know, I promised myself that today, heading into the holiday, I was going to spend time with family, not let Tennessee football get me down again, but here we are. Trey, I've got a question for you. As someone who has, a little bit more inside knowledge in the program than the rest of us, let's just assume, hopefully this is not the case, in my opinion, but let's assume Pruitt does come back next year. What do you think, what changes do you think he might try to make on offense that would that would offer any different, more aggressive, better quality product on the field than what we've actually seen thus far beyond just a quarterback change? Or do you think he just is so focused defensively that he still does not realize that we have a major gaping problem on the offensive side of the ball?
Man, I think, David, you got to do something with the offensive line. I think the offensive line is almost, I don't want to say regressed from last season, but they definitely haven't lived up to the height of this year. And people have to understand, too, Auburn defense is just not really that good. So that's why you had Eric Gray rush for so much against them. And also they dropped, they were dropping 8 pretty much and begging Tennessee to throw. I think offensive line, I think quarterback development, you're going to have to take a look at Winkie's contract. And see if that's something that you want to do. I mean, you're not going to be able to get rid of Chaney unless you're ready to bite $1.7 million. So I think, and this is just being honest, I think T. Martin and maybe, I mean, T. Martin and Jay Graham are probably the ones that are safe. from the offensive side. I think you have to take a look at the other ones. Russ, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think you nailed it, Trey, but I think the larger issue here is, and the reason that I'm so out on Jeremy Pruitt is it's all about him. And yeah. David, you got to stay tuned for our third hour because Trey's going to tell a story. Trey has the inside scoop on what happened on the pick six at Auburn the other night. And there's been a lot of debate about, you know, everybody, it's very easy to throw that all on JG, but the way that went down will absolutely make your head spin. And in my opinion, tells you everything that's wrong about Tennessee's offense right now. So stay tuned for that.
Absolutely. Well, Trey, do you think that Jeremy Pruitt, do you think he is really fully aware of our struggle in offense? Or do you think that, in his opinion, he's so focused on the defensive side of the ball that he's just kind of blind to it?
No, he's aware because he wouldn't be throwing his offensive coordinator under the bus every other press conference that he has. I mean, I think he's being made aware of it. And I think, stay tuned. But, yeah, I think Jeremy Pruitt is dabbing into the offense a little bit like he was dabbing into Tyson Hilton's offense. So, yes, I think he's full aware of what's going on that side of the football.
So, Bear, I know you are not on the Hugh Freeze train as much as the rest of us are, but I know we're, you know, at this point we want a proven head coach. Bear, what do you think about the potential of – what do you think about this scenario? We bring in Kendall Briles as head coach, give him a chance, bring in Muschamp as defensive coordinator, kind of let them – let Briles handle the offense more. Let Muschamp,
don't
break defense.
No,
that's intriguing. No. I like it, David. No, that's intriguing.
No, I'd take Hugh Freeze. I'd let Hugh Freeze baptize me down next to the waste treatment plant down there on the river before I'd ever agree to have Kendall Briles punk ass come in here.
Is it just because of last name is Briles?
He is a piece of garbage.
David, thank you, man. We're out of time. Stay with us. Hour number three of The Drive coming up. Bears got your top five at five after this.